Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
It's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. The book Tales of Forgotten Chicago contains 21 fascinating little-known stories about a great city and its people. Richard Lindberg has dug deeply to reveal lost historical events and hidden gems from Chicago's past. Spanning the Civil War through the 60s, the book showcases forgotten crimes, punishments, consequences, stories about the first policewoman in Chicago hired as a result of a senseless killing, and so many little-known stories. Richard is an award-winning author and historian, and he joins us on the Team Hochberg phone line. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Dave. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic. So, you know, this book, you know, and I've got so many, there's so many Chicago books that are out there, and this one's unique because it's not the same stories. It's not the Al Capones. It's not everything that I'm used to reading when I'm going back and doing listening to things about Chicago. How did you come up with this idea for the book?
Well, it's an interesting story. Briefly, originally it was intended to be co-authored with Alderman Ed Burke. We kicked around several ideas. He wanted to do a book, and I said, well, how about some stories about some little-known and lesser-known incidents in Chicago history? And that was the game plan moving forward, but then, of course, things changed, and as you say, and I ended up flying solo, and I published the book this past July with Southern Illinois University Press, and it was a real delight to try to probe deeper beneath the usual subject matter of the 1893 World's Fair, Jane Addams, Al Capone, the tried and true, which it seems to be constant with every book ever attempted on Chicago, that inevitably it gets down to that kind of subject matter. Gangsters and sometimes hot dog stands. This is what we typically find when books about the city tend to come out.
Now, and you picked 21 stories. Now, where did you begin to dig and find all these different journeys? Because I'm sure you found more than 21. I'm sure this is pared down.
Well, the book could really go into four different editions, but I started with the Civil War. I was in Washington, D.C. a couple years ago, and I'm particularly fascinated by John Wilkes Booth and the Lincoln assassination. I visited the Surratt Farm, which is a little-known Lincoln location where Booth fled to following the assassination. Then I thought to myself, what was John Wilkes Booth's connection with Chicago? Mm-hmm. Well, as it turned out, he performed here three times during the Civil War, and he had a very close personal friendship with James McVicker, the founder of the McVicker's Theater, and McVicker's daughter ended up marrying John Wilkes Booth's brother Edward, the famous tragedian and Shakespearean actor. Mm-hmm. And McVicker had to really apologize for his friendship with Booth following the assassination. And from that point, I recall some other stories that I had vaguely remembered, including the first auto road race in Chicago in 1895, believe it or not. It was the first automobile race in the United States. And it went from the Museum of Science and Industry up to Evanston and back on a day much like this. It was wow. In the middle of a snowstorm the day after Thanksgiving, and it took nearly 24 hours for those entrance to get to Evanston and to come back on snow-choked roadways. And so these are the kinds of stories that that I plunged into. And there's some very familiar people in here and sidelights to their careers as well.
Well, talk a little bit about it. I want to touch upon a few of these stories. Is you talk about the family O'Leary and the rest of the story. I mean, if you're from Chicago, if you're not from Chicago, there's always been, okay, Mrs. O'Leary's cow, you know, tipped over the lantern, which isn't necessarily true. There was no real proof of that, but you dug a little deeper into this.
Yeah, my colleague Dick Bales wrote a fabulous book about the Chicago fire, and he's one of the rating authorities. But as I dug deeper into this story, I disagreed with Dick on the contention that one Peg Leg Sullivan, kind of a community ne'er-do-well, lit the fire inside the barn. I found some old accounts of a family living next door to the O'Learys celebrating a farewell party at the McLaughlin residence, which was the family lived right next door, of a member that was going off to Ireland. And there was a fire that night in the O'Leary barn after one of the party goers decided to milk the cow on their own without disturbing the O'Learys. Kate O'Leary had gone to bed that night, and around 9:30, 10 o'clock, they snuck into the barn to actually try to attempt to milk the cow. The man who was doing, his name was Dennis Connors, fumbled and really did not know how to work with the cow. And yes, indeed, there may be truth in the fact that the cow indeed kicked over the lantern. After 140 years of this question, it actually, to me, now seems probable that is exactly how the Chicago fire started. But it was no fault of the O'Learys, who became socially ostracized as a result. They had to move to the Stockyards District on Halsted Street to get away, which was then a pretty remote part of Chicago. They remained quiet on it and refused to talk to reporters. And in the city council some years back, Alderman Burke introduced a resolution to absolve the O'Learys of any complicity. But meanwhile, the scapegoat became Peg Leg Sullivan. But I think that Sullivan actually was the hero. He went and alerted the O'Learys to the fire that was in the barn, and then later signed a deposition attesting to this fact. And so the rewrite of the story kind of gets rewritten again by me, and it's just a fascinating look and a reinterpretation.
So many years later that there's a resolution to kind of, you know, forgive the O'Learys. I wonder if there's ever going to be a resolution to forgive Steve Bartman from that Cubs catching that ball, you know?
Well, 100
years
be
from now.
Story and maybe 50 years from
maybe
now.
Maybe in 50 years, yes. The book is called Tales of Forgotten Chicago. The author is Richard Lindberg, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. We're talking to award-winning author and historian Richard Lindberg on his book, Tales of Forgotten Chicago. So one story, and I don't know if I really knew this, but, you know, we all think Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone. That's really not the case, and it was someone here in Chicago.
Well, that's a tale that's kind of mixed with tragedy and irony. Alexander Graham Bell likely was not the inventor. Instead, Elisha Gray, eminent scientist who lived for many years in Highland Park, really conceived the telephone, but he failed to secure the patent in time. By a matter of 6 or 7 hours in Washington, D.C., Alexander Graham Bell got the patent before he did, likely through trickery and deception and perhaps even bribery. The patent examiner apparently was beholden in some way to Bell and his associates, and was not above taking a bribe to issue the patent. And this was an issue that Elisha Gray, an otherwise esteemed scientist, died in the early 20th century, very well respected. But just imagine how would you would feel inventing a telephone and not getting the proper credit for it. But looking closer at it, there were actually a number of people at that time who were involved in coming up with the patent for the telephone. He wasn't the only one, but he was the closest to the finish line and just missed out. And he died embittered, and who can blame
I'm
him,
sure,
really?
Right, yeah.
But the name that's really lost to history is one Zenas Wilbur, and he was the patent examiner in Washington, D.C., and he was a drunkard. He was a former Union Army soldier, and he had gotten into some problems and was not averse to taking some money for it. And despite Gray's protestations over the years, it fell on deaf ears, and he kind of slipped into the abyss of forgotten history. And his home still stands in Highland Park, and it's reputed to be haunted, from what I understand. I guess that goes without saying.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. There's a couple other stories I want to touch upon, Richard. One is the first policewoman in Chicago.
Yes, Marie Connolly Owens. She was active in the 1890s and early 20th century. She rose to the rank of sergeant and is believed to be the first policewoman in the United States. She was hired by the mayor of Chicago in 1891. There had been terrible abuses with child laborers who were working in atrocious factory conditions. There was a horrific crime in the mid-1880s involving a young girl who was senselessly murdered at a factory on Green Street on the South Side. And it was decided by the City Council and the Chicago Police Department to begin to hire matrons to go and inspect factories and places where children were employed. And she was the first of five women who were given this role. Later on, she became a sworn Chicago police officer, and given the prevailing prejudices and discriminations of the day,
sure.
She was kind of relegated to what they call women's work, as a part, you know, as it was then known, where they would deal with runaway children and they would, examine sweatshops and incidences of parental abuse, and she would investigate the slum dwellings to see to observe the quality of life and make recommendations. But indeed, she became a full sergeant in the police department and later had arresting powers. And it's quite an interesting story.
And groundbreaking, obviously, for that time
history.
Stars and Bars and the Symbol of a City.
That was the invention of the flag of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago did not have an official flag at that time. And there was a contest for it in 1893 to come up with some kind of emblem for it. And finally, they did. And the stars and bars reflect the bars reflect the two branches of the Chicago River, the North and South Branch. And the four stars represent the most important aspects of Chicago history, the World's Columbian Exposition,
right.
The Fort Dearborn massacres, they called it in those days, the 1933 World's Fair. And the flag was adopted by resolution in 1919 in Chicago, and there it has remained since then. It's the symbol of our city.
It absolutely is. The Leaning Tower, that's the last one I want to hit today, but share that story.
Oh, drive down Toohey Avenue.
Yeah, over in my neighborhood.
Miles,
yeah.
You see this sudden, very curious replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And it just kind of sits there on Toohey Avenue, and people here take it for granted. I recall driving by it with my cousins from Europe one day, and they were astonished to see it. Something that we take for granted as we drive by, and you know, you don't think anything of it. But it was a product of the 1930s, and it was an industrial project designed by Robert Ilge, who was an inventor of various air conditioning fans before we had air conditioning. And he built a little park called Ilge Air Park, mm-hmm. for his employees, right. as a place for them to go recreate. And he went to Pisa, studied the famous tower, and came back and erected this this monument to it, this identical replica, although it's shorter in size.
Right. Yep.
And it was built over a drain pipe.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Yeah, it was a drain pipe. Yeah. It just covered up a drain pipe. He had a swimming pool built, and then years later, it became a YMCA in 1963.
That's right. And we only touched upon a few of these stories. The book is called Tales of Forgotten Chicago. The author is Richard Lindberg. Pick it up at your local bookseller or at Amazon.com. Great stories, Richard. Images, the photos that you dug up are also fabulous in the book. And stay safe out there.